May 20th, 1991, 1 p.m., Hearing Room 357, House Committee on Judiciary, Subcommittee on Civil Law and Judicial Administration.
Excuse me. This is where we trade away liability for damages. Hey, House Bill 2732, we're going to convene the House Committee on Judiciary, Subcommittee on Civil Law and Judicial Administration. We're going to have a public hearing on House Bill 2732. Ask staff to, have Representative Markham here today? Not yet. To bring us up to speed on where we are on this bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2732 is a bill which is similar in form to several others which we have dealt with. The bill would limit the tort liability of certain charitable organizations. This bill, as I believe House Bill 3732, I believe it was, incorporates the language which exists in the Oregon Tort Claims Act and applies it to charitable organizations which are defined as charitable organizations under Internal Revenue Code 501c3. The materials which you have include statutes from three states which provide this kind of liability limitation and also provision ORS 65.369, which limits the liability of directors of certain charitable organizations, nonprofit corporations.
Dr. Dennis Mills, why don't we invite you up? Dan McCullough, Garland Rogers, and Wayne House. If you don't mind, if you pull up an extra chair, we can have all four of you come up together. We invite Mr. Williamson, but he just doesn't fit in with this crowd. Thank you all for coming. Mr. Mills, you'd like to start first?
Yes, my name is Dr. Dennis Mills. I'm the regional director for the Association of Christian Schools International, whose headquarters are in Vancouver, Washington. I represent 83 member schools in Oregon. I am in favor, in principle, of House Bill 2732 and encourage the adoption of this legislation, including my amendment, which you have there. There are three other states, Massachusetts, South Carolina, and Texas, already they have similar legislation, which has been unanimously upheld by their state Supreme Courts. This act will, I believe, promote goodwill toward charitable organizations which help citizens in Oregon. This act would impose limits to protect organizations from excessive and meritless claims for damages which tend to clog the dockets of the state courts. The amendment should read Section 1 after line 10, insert number 3, agent means any person who is rendering service for the employer and is acting within the scope of the employer's authority. This includes a volunteer who is any person, including a director, officer, trustee, or direct service volunteer who renders service for the charitable organization, but who does not receive compensation in excess of expenses incurred. Then under Section 2, line 15, after the dollar sign, insert 100,000. On line 17, after the dollar sign, insert 300,000. On line 18, after the dollar sign, insert 300,000. On line 20, after the dollar sign, insert 400,000. On line 21, after the dollar sign, insert 1 million. And finally, on line 25, after the dollar sign, insert 1 million. Thank you, Chair and committee members.
Thank you, Mr. Mills. Mr. McCullough.
I'm Dan McCulloch. I live here in Salem at 2555 Green Tree. I represent the Seventh-day Adventist Church and Oregon Federation of Independent Schools. We would encourage the adoption of this legislation, especially the inclusion of the amendment that has just been read to define agent and to include volunteers as charitable organizations. We operate with numerous volunteers, yet the liability for or the possibility of unneeded liability for their work, which is a benefit to the entire state in many places and many times because of their volunteered service, does not would give us a greater freedom to do that without undue monetary expenses. I appreciate the opportunity to share with you and to encourage the adoption of this legislation today.
Thank you. Mr. Rogers.
Garland Rogers from Lebanon, Oregon. I pastor First Assembly of God there, and I'm also a general presbyter of the State Assemblies of God. And I'm commenting in favor of the passage of the bill. Charitable organizations are being sued with increasing and alarming frequency, often a single injury occurring on charitable organization premises or in the course of a church-sponsored activity can result in a jury verdict far exceeding the organization's assets or insurance coverage. According to Richard Hammer, an attorney, a recent seminar sponsored by the American Bar Association was designed specifically to assist lawyers in suing churches and religious organizations. Here are some of the reasons I would encourage the formulation and passage of HB 2732. Charitable organizations are sued on the basis of the legal principle respondeat superior. Under this principle, an employer is legally responsible for the misconduct or negligence of employees or agents. The policy considerations supporting the principle of respondeat superior rest upon the fundamental principle of risk allocation. That is, an employer has a unique ability to allocate the risks of inevitable injuries by the consumers of its products, services through price adjustments. By increasing its prices, the employer allocates the risk of injuries to the consumers of its products or services. That's great in for-profit products or services, but it has no application to most nonprofit organizations. For instance, the church cannot compel its members to donate larger amounts to allocate risks to the consumers of its services. For this reason, the rule of vicarious liability should be used sparingly, if at all, in the context of nonprofit organizations, because they have no adequate way to allocate legal risks to consumers of their services. Therefore, they should have legislative protection. Insurance coverage is not an effective means for churches to allocate risks. Escalating lawsuits will make insurance far too expensive, sometimes prohibitively for small churches and organizations. If the lawsuits were to continue to proliferate, insurance policies will become difficult for charitable organizations to obtain, or the policies will be so full of exclusions, the policy will not be valid to carry. In a case upholding the validity of a state law limiting the liability of charities, the New Jersey Supreme Court made the following observation. The principle of charitable immunity was deeply rooted in the common law of New Jersey. The principle is premised on the fact that charitable associations are created to pursue philanthropic goals, and the accomplishment of these goals would be hampered if they were to pay tort liability judgments in cases similar to this matter. A person who makes a charitable contribution expects his donation to further the goals of the organization and not to be used to satisfy lawsuits which bear no direct relationship to those goals. Then, charitable organizations are for the most part solely dependent on unpaid volunteers. Since we don't have the availability of FBI records to check their backgrounds, We are dependent upon their word concerning their honesty and integrity. This makes the organizations vulnerable and potentially liable. This makes us easy targets. Furthermore, a background check would make some volunteers nervous enough not to want to volunteer, further crippling the ability of organizations to be effective in helping give food, use clothing to the poor, or the many other things to help hurting people in need. Then, three states have enacted laws imposing dollar limits of the liability of the charitable organizations. I've enclosed a copy on the back of their statutes. The South Carolina and Massachusetts laws were upheld by their respective Supreme Courts within the past 2 years. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of all the charitable organizations in the state of Oregon, I urge you to help us continue to help others in our fair state by completing the process of HB 2732 to protect us from closing some doors to vital organizations. Then you have those three statutes in the back.
Thank you. Dr. House.
Hi, I'm Dr. Wayne House, Vice President for Academic Affairs, Western Baptist College in Salem, Oregon. I thank the chair and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify on behalf of House Bill 2732. I'd also suggest, along with the other gentlemen, that an amendment be made to the bill which includes volunteers as a category of agents within the meaning of the bill. Charitable organizations such as schools, colleges, churches have been afforded special recognition and deference within our country from its inception. This has been due to the belief by our people and legislators that these organizations provide a valuable, if not indispensable, service to our communities, which the government or other elements within society cannot or does not do. Moreover, these organizations save taxpayers considerable amounts of public funds, encourage community cohesiveness, and a spirit of giving on the part of its citizens. These private organizations operate on limited budgets, disproportionate to the good that they do, so that it is in the public interest to restrict the liability that they can incur for simple negligence as outlined in this bill. Volunteers should be included within the meaning of an agent in the bill, since the use of volunteers is so important to the well-being and service capabilities of charitable organizations. I encourage each of you to support HB 2732 and also to support an amendment to include volunteers within the meaning of agents within the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, whoever, let me ask a question. Whoever's wants to respond, this is a bill that applies to all those organizations that qualify under 501c3 status. We have like to hear from you about what instances you have faced where this has caused a problem and what the present state of the insurance is in regard to the ability of these entities to purchase insurance, to find a market, as well as instances that you can describe that would cover situations where an unfortunate incident has occurred and essentially required the shutting down of the organization. You know, those specifics would be very helpful.
One of our Assemblies of God churches was sued for a sexual misconduct case. The two parties involved in the case did meet on the church campus. However, the incident that the young man did confess to and led to his imprisonment happened in their apartment, or the young man's apartment, and completely out of the church's jurisdiction. However, they still sued the church for $5 million, sued our district council for an additional $2 million, our general council for an additional $2 million. And had the suit been won by the family of the boy that was molested, it would have been very, very possible the church would have lost their entire building, they said. And as you can see, and insurance companies have notified us that if these things continue, that the insurance rates will go out of sight, to the point that most small churches can't afford that kind of insurance for liabilities.
Hey, thank you. Any of the other gentlemen?
We haven't had a situation at the college in which, you know, we've had a liability for a claim such as this, but I do know based on the the fact if you do not have this kind of liability limitation, even an action like this at a small college such as ours, it would basically put us out of business. In other words, you if you had a multimillion-dollar claim against our current revenues, it would probably not be possible. And if you right now the insurance, not only for such thing as tort liability, but other kinds of insurance is increasing so much that it's right now straining our budget within our our limitations. So any additional increases would be very difficult.
And what's it costing you now, and what kind of insurance are you getting for that? What are you paying, or what limits liability?
I didn't come prepared to give the exact figures on that. I do know, though, that right now we're running very, very close on our insurance as far as what we're capable of paying within our budget. So actually any appreciable increase, which I'm sure it would make a big difference for us.
Have you been notified by your insurance company that these increases are coming, or?
No.
Any comment from?
Not representing other 501c3 organizations today are organizations that could be affected. In one case, the Boy Scouts of America settled a $12.24 million claim. That would pretty well bankrupt just about any organization. Most of our schools do not have more than $1 million coverage.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Clark, then Representative Edmondson.
For the gentleman from Western, I was a little surprised at one of your statements when you said that our society and legislatures have been willing to engage in a trade-off of sorts for nonprofits, including churches, who provide certain services for the community, and we've been willing to grant special protections and special privileges for those nonprofits, non-taxation for one. And just so you know where I'm coming from on this, I spent the last 4 or 5 years representing 25 private Christian schools in litigation with the state over unemployment tax. Right. So I've thought this stuff through a little bit. I hope what you were not saying is that the reason for the tax-exempt status for churches is because churches engage in certain services that the state deems worthwhile. That may be true for other nonprofits, but I hope that the reason for not taxing churches is a jurisdictional question and not a trade-off of government favor for governmentally approved services.
Actually, if I were arguing this, I would argue the jurisdictional question, but the reality of it is ever since Bob Jones versus the United States, Justice Brennan essentially used this particular terminology. I mean, that is what the court record is. But I would agree with you that jurisdiction puts the church and taxation it puts church taxation beyond the jurisdiction of the state.
Because it seems to me, Mr. Chair, it seems to me that it is a very risky business to begin to tie any kind of special favor or special status, whether it's tax exemption or limitation of liability, to the activities of a nonprofit, especially a church, because what goes around comes around. And 10 years from now, 20 years from now, you folks may be back in here testifying against a bill that says you no longer get limited liability, you no longer get tax exemption unless you do A, B, C, D, and E, which the state deems to be worthwhile activities. You may or may not deem to be worthwhile activities. So I want to caution you, coming in support of House Bill 2732, that it's a double-edged sword.
Representative Clark, I really appreciate that, and I think you're right. I mean, that is my view, that the jurisdictional question is paramount. But nonetheless, the only reason I mention that, first of all, is to bring the fact that since you have churches, schools, and others that are providing a service, they are not really in the same kind of situation as a profit business for the ability to support themselves. And I think that society needs to recognize that there is a certain deference that must be given in view of that. But the reason I mention it is because of the Supreme Court decision that used that terminology.
Okay. Just last comment, Mr. Chair. I just encourage the thinking that separates out in that regard, nonprofit charities from churches and its endeavors, because there are two different animals from the standpoint of law. We don't have a constitutional provision protecting nonprofit charities.
Correct.
We do have a constitutional provision protecting churches and religious liberty, and you have to keep that separate, both for the good and the bad. It goes both ways. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Have a question too, or whatever you want to do.
I'm always cautious with anecdotal testimony. Horror stories are usually bad, but they're rarely the rule. However, you've raised two anecdotes that I want to ask you, just to the extent you are familiar. The Boy Scout sex abuse case. Are you familiar with the degree and nature of the sexual abuse that was at issue there?
Not the nature of that.
Okay. What about
only the claim amount?
Well, I guess that really gets to my point, because that seems to be all you're interested in is the amount of money at issue, not the lives of the victims. Because we've had in other subcommittees of this committee testimony day after day after day, including the mothers of Boy Scouts who were involved in other cases. And it just seems, I find your position to be so incredible from a church point of view, that you're in telling us it's too expensive, so we've got to have protection. The people who are the victims of the torts for which this liability claims are made, their lives are ruined. And as churches, you can't just preach about it on Sunday, gentlemen. And I'm sorry, but this makes me angry that it's like a feeding frenzy in this legislature, that everybody who's got an insurance policy wants to limit their liability. And there are people who are hurt, and that is why those claims are brought. Those are not made-up claims. And when church officials are involved in sexual abuse, and there's lawsuits stemming out of that, to have the churches in here saying the solution is to limit our liability, I'm sorry, but I think that you are running 180 degrees away from your philosophical base. And if I believe there is a legitimate place for church and scripture in this society. But I'm afraid it's not on Monday afternoon in the Capitol building.
May I respond, please?
Sure.
Okay. I have a statement. If I remember correctly, the bill does not include the questions of gross negligence or intentional torts. And actually, the question of sexual abuse, things of that sort, would clearly be intentional tort, or at the very least, you could argue on some other grounds. But we're talking about simple negligence here. We're not talking about what you're saying.
Well,
at least that's
not
what I'm talking about. That's not what I'm talking
about. Simple negligence, I have a hard time seeing where the damage, the limitation on damage is even going to help you at all.
Mr. Chairman, in further response to your previous question, the Teen Challenge Centers of Oregon, about 3 years ago, did have their insurance carrier completely drop them because of potential liabilities, because they're a Christian rehab center that works with persons often who come out of the prison or institutional system, and because of potential liabilities. And they had a real tough time finding any insurance company that would carry them because of the escalation of lawsuits. And there are 5 centers in Oregon like that.
And they're no longer in business?
No, they finally found someone to cover them.
I don't know the details about what they might have paid, do you?
No, I don't.
Representative Matt Mannix.
I'm curious, have churches gotten together and sought to sort of pool their resources and seek insurance coverage under some sort of consolidated plan or group plan in order to keep their risks and rates down?
The Association of Christian Schools International does contract with T. Forrest Jones to provide the best coverage as possible, and that's open at any particular year as to who might have the best premium rates based on the volume of schools that would join, and that's a voluntary situation.
Follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Brad Mepson, Matt.
What kind of, I missed the first part of this hearing. I was down in the Senate Judiciary, so I'm sorry I missed it, but do you have any information to share with us, or are you going to be sending us any information on what kind of a cost there may be associated for these churches to get insurance coverage? Let me throw out a comment here, for instance. I understand that the Archdiocese of Portland, the Catholic Church, is self-insured, and there may be some excess insurance coverage. Maybe Mr. Castagna can help us with that later on, if Of course, he may not be here on this bill at all. He's not, apparently. But for purposes of a great deal of their liability, they're self-insured, and they may have an excess plan of some kind. But that's how they've kept their premiums down, because they feel confident among themselves that they can take care of their issues, make sure that they're running their enterprises, so to speak, appropriately. And on the other hand, they insure one another through a coalition. Is there any such proposal going on? That's what I'm looking for, information along those lines.
What we're trying to say is that we need pretty specific information on trends in insurance, on incidents and things. The more specifics you can give us, better. And some of us, obviously the bill gets a hearing in the committee at this point because it's viewed favorably by, but there's a requirement that we have enough votes and things like that, and we want to make sure that whatever further testimony this bill received from you gentlemen is with that context. That it's we want a little more than what we've been given, and you didn't have any idea that this was necessary. But just so you know, we need to have specific incidents because you know, we have tort limits of liability for government because government carries out functions that can't be carried out in a profit-making manner. Charitable institutions do the same thing. We just have to have a pretty good reason for limiting tort liability. Even if you are, honestly, as a comparison with other bills we've had, your limits are much higher, judging from the dollar amounts on these amendments, than most. So we're on the right track. It's just that we need to have some specific instances and things like that and some details about insurance trends and insurance availability and things in that regard. Representative Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question of the committee. I'm kind of concerned about the jury awards that far exceed a church's assets or insurance coverage. I can see where, you know, the Boy Scouts of America would have $12 million to come up with, but if a little church had only $1 million in insurance, is it likely that the jury would award them way far and above? You know, that would take everything they have plus their buildings and
well,
their...
It's only if the award involved punitive damages. If they were asking for punitive damage, the plaintiff, asking for damages for just punishment nature, at that point in time, their counsel would be introducing the financial records and the assets of the church as a way to give the jury an indication of what would be needed to get the attention of this entity.
That does slide, though, doesn't it? The attention of a national organization versus a little local church.
Hopefully the jury would take that into consideration, would be instructed by a judge that you ought to take into consideration what you've heard in the way of their financial assets and anything you want to do to punish them beyond the actual damages or the general pain and suffering that occurred as a result of the injury to the individual. You have to take into consideration what you've heard in the financial report. So the difficult thing, I think, is not necessarily the award of punitive damages, because that's kind of tied to some real hard evidence. It's the award of non-economic damages, general pain and suffering that sometimes balloons pretty high, and the $12.4 million some people would say that wasn't near enough to pay for the ruined life of the boy. To the same token, it had been maybe end of that service period, end of that nonprofit corporation. It may cease to exist, but in this case, it was the Boy Scouts, since I think they had LDS folks and some other people in line on that one. So there was enough financial resources to take care of that judgment, but it wouldn't have been, the Assembly of God down the road or something. Or Semax.
Let's put all of this in context. As we've looked from bill to bill, I look for some rationale. In some instances, we've talked about a particular operation of some organization as something that will exempt or protect, or we've looked at a particular kind of service, such as medical services, or we've looked at the contractual relationship of an organization to the state, as in vocational services for disabled individuals, and we've said, well, they work under contracts, so to that extent we'll make them agents of the state. There's always been a rationale. We're talking about a much broader bill here, and the rationale is, well, insurance is hitting us hard. In response, it seems to me we might talk about what is the specific case situation in Oregon, what's the problem in Oregon, what is the insurance problem in Oregon. But in terms of a solution, you might also consider, well, should certain kinds of charitable organizations ask only for some limited protection, such as protection against punitive damages? Punitive damages are usually there as a method of punishment, and it seemed to me a charitable organization does not need to be punished because you're thereby punishing the public, which benefits from the charitable activities. That's one notion. We might talk about an opportunity of a 501c3 organization to be allowed to present to the jury during the damages phase of a trial evidence regarding the nature of the organization and where its assets come from and where its assets go, so that the jury might consider that in evaluating a damage award. So when they hear the pain and suffering story of the individual, maybe they ought to hear the pain and suffering of the community that will result when you alleviate that individual's pain and suffering. See what I'm getting at? On the other hand, if you let that in, you also ought to allow in evidence of insurance, because if there is insurance, then the insurance alleviates the pain and suffering of the organization. But those are the kinds of complexities we need to deal with, and just invite whatever information you can provide along those lines. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions, these gentlemen? Thank you very much for coming. Charlie, why don't you come on up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Just a couple of points. I won't repeat everything I've said on prior bills, and I think the committee really has raised many of the questions that I had noted. Some points, though, I think you will find most hospitals are 501c3 corporations and cover themselves for medical malpractice up to $5 million.